This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. It's 7:33. A new standard of care for newborns is sweeping the state of West Virginia. Nurses, obstetricians, and pediatricians and others involved in obstetrical care and policy are taking notes from kangaroos. Glynis Board explains.
Imagine you've just spent the better part of 24 hours working your way through a canal that is so tight your skull had to unhinge to allow you through. Now, imagine before your eyes can adjust, the first thing you experience once you're through is a slap and a mugging. You'd cry too, right? Well, new practices are taking the newborn's point of view more carefully into consideration, and it's changing the culture of delivery rooms, and perhaps the state as well. Labor and delivery nurses and other obstetrical professionals who work in hospitals in southern West Virginia where babies are delivered recently met at Raleigh General Hospital in Beckley to learn more about what's called kangaroo care. Ellen King is a nurse and the executive director of Women's and Children's Services at Raleigh General. King says these workshops are changing the culture of care in delivery rooms.
Overall, the culture is sort of a medical model where we assume that the baby is ill, and so we take the baby away from the mom, and we want to examine it and weigh it and measure it and check all of the different bits and pieces. So we're switching more to a model of normalcy and healthy baby. So instead of assuming that we have a sick baby, we're going to assume that we have a healthy baby, being ready for a response if there is a problem, but still kind of switching that model to a more natural and normal type of behavior.
Kangaroo care, or skin-to-skin care, is a practice where newborns are taken directly after delivery and placed skin-to-skin on their mother's chest. King says at Raleigh General Hospital, they already practice kangaroo care in some cases, but the workshop accomplishes two things. It's the first step in implementing a formal policy change, and it's emboldening staff to have confidence in those changes.
I've been in a lot of labors and a lot of deliveries over my career, and every once in a while, a delivery gets you. And the skin-to-skin deliveries, the babies that get that opportunity to be with their moms, the joy in these moms' faces, you know, they've worked so hard to have a baby. They've gone through this labor process, and this is their reward. Looking at their baby, it just is this calmness that the baby has that sort of is transmitted to everybody in the room. To see those moments is just really fulfilling.
Denise Barbier is from the University of Louisville Hospital Center for Women and Infants. She's traveling the state to share the details of kangaroo care. She's already hosted many workshops in Kentucky, and while it takes a couple of years to officially register changes they're seeing, Barbier says the practice is already changing statistics in Kentucky.
When we started our Birth KC initiative, which is putting the baby immediately on the mom's chest, in the delivery room, I give them an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours to make that transition, and they'll actually take their first breast milk feeding because that's what they are born to do. And so when we started doing that, our breastfeeding rates jumped from, we were at 45% at the time, and it jumped up to 51% the first month. And I can tell you our current breastfeeding rates, breastfeeding initiation, just in August of this year, was 78%. It did happen overnight. It's one of those things that just makes an immediate impact.
But let's back up a second. Why do we care how many moms breastfeed their babies? What's the value? Well, it all started with premature babies in Bogota, Colombia. Well, I mean, maybe it didn't start there exactly, but that's where our story starts. Denise Barbier tells the story at workshops throughout the state where two neonatologists hiking in the mountains of Colombia in the early 1980s came across a woman with a tiny, obviously premature infant tucked into her blouse, like a mama kangaroo. She kept the baby there, nursing it, and by all estimations of those neonatologists, that child probably shouldn't have survived, and yet they found her thriving.
They looked at this idea and decided that, you know, this could maybe help improve their infant outcomes for their premature infant. So in their hospital, what they would do is they would have the mothers come in and have the babies put inside or next to them, skin to skin, between the breasts, and infants would have easy access to nutrition and also be kept warm. And as a result, their infant mortality rates decrease dramatically.
So from decreasing mortality rates in premature babies in Colombia, and in combination with a significant amount of research being done elsewhere, kangaroo care came to Kentucky, and it was extended to full-term infants. In addition to benefits for the baby like thermoregulation, improved cardiorespiratory oxygenation, better sleep, and, as Barbier says, kangaroo care has dramatically improved breastfeeding rates, which comes with its own set of benefits.
There are less ear infections, less allergies, less asthma. It's linked to decrease in childhood obesity, decrease in SIDS, decrease in certain types of childhood cancers, decrease in diabetes later in life.
And those are just some of the benefits for the baby. There's also a list that applies to moms, including lowering risk of developing type 2 diabetes, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and postpartum depression. West Virginia Perinatal Partnership's Outreach Education Coordinator, Shauna Lively, has been working to get this information out to West Virginians.
We have high rates of obesity, we have high rates of substance abuse, we have some high rates of sudden unexpected infant death, things like this. And I'm really thinking that the kangaroo care that we do in the hospitals to initiate mother-baby bonding will go a long way in helping these issues.
The workshop at Raleigh General is one of five coordinated across the state, provided by a grant from the West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources. Four more workshops are scheduled in October and November throughout the state. Lively says all 27 of the hospitals that deliver in the state have been invited to attend the workshops. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glynis Board in Wheeling.
The 14th Annual West Virginia Filmmakers Festival kicks off this coming Friday at the Elk Theater in Sutton. Dozens of films from around the globe will be screened over 3 days, including a dozen or so from West Virginia's filmmakers, many of whom will be in attendance. Caitlin Renee Campbell is this year's festival director. She's an actress, producer, and independent filmmaker herself. She stopped by our studios recently to talk about this year's festival. How is the state of filmmaking in West Virginia? And you come at it with a good perspective because you've been to California, you've been to the center of where films are made, and what's the state of filmmaking in West Virginia?
Well, I'm really pleased to say that this is the 14th year of the West Virginia Filmmakers Festival. And when it started, there were no other film festivals, to my knowledge, in the state. We now have the West Virginia International Film Festival, and we also have the West Virginia Shorts Festival, which is held in Morgantown, and I believe that's held in March around St. Patrick's Day weekend, and that was the third or fourth year of that festival this year. So I'm pleased to say that there are more forums for filmmakers, you know, in West Virginia now than there were when we started.
Is filmmaking alive and well in West Virginia?
Yes, I would say it is alive and well, which is why we wanted to, this year, in the 14th year, open up the submissions. The first 13 years of the festival were strictly West Virginia films and West Virginia filmmakers. And this year we actually opened it up to beyond our beautiful mountains and accepted film submissions from the entire world. And this year we received 94 submissions, 58 of them we are screening. We have 13 animations, 13 also West Virginia filmmakers are in the festival this year, as well as, films for the first time that are subtitled from Hungary, Denmark, the Netherlands, French Canada, Australia, United Kingdom, which of course are in English.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a broad spectrum. And the idea for me being involved this year is I wanted to open up the submissions beyond the state so we could bring films in to inspire the filmmakers within the state.
What challenges do filmmakers in West Virginia face?
Filmmakers in West Virginia face the same challenges that filmmakers, you know, face anywhere in the world that are making film and telling their stories, and that is financing them. We're really fortunate that we have crowdfunding that's become available via Kickstarter and Indiegogo. And you hear more and more about that even today with filmmakers that are well-known and certainly working actors in the industry, like Zach Braff, for example, who goes out and raises, you know, several $3 or $4 million to make his own independent movie because then he has creative control over it. Fortunately for someone like Zach, he has, you know, a lot of friends and he has some know-how and he has, you know, a good, you know, group that he's working with that he draws that money very quickly. Whereas a lot of independent and student productions, you know, their budgets may be something as simple as $3,000 to $30,000. But the crowdfunding has enabled us to, you know, make our movies and have more creative control than ever before, which is a good thing. And the same thing happened with Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I believe it is another feature that they went out and raised the money to make a feature film out of that, you know. So that's also a really another great example of even people in the industry that have studio pull behind them are going to crowdfunding because it gives them the creative control that we don't get mm-hmm. in the studio system.
The festival isn't just for the filmmakers. It's also for film lovers. So give us a sense of what we're going to see at the film festival. Some of your favorites.
Well, I'm really pleased to share that Marilyn Evans, who is a fabulous West Virginia filmmaker and the 2010 Filmmaker of the Year, is bringing her short film, Blood on the Mountain, this year. It will screen on Saturday at 11:45 at the Elk Theater on Main Street in Sutton, as all the films screen there. This is such an important piece, specifically I enjoy, but it also is because it's so specific to West Virginia and the fact that it starts off with the 2010 mining disaster at Massey's Big Branch Mine.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And mm-hmm. it goes sort of through a history of West Virginia and mining. So I'm really, really pleased to be able to bring that. That's a short this year, and it will be released next year. We will have it in the festival as its full documentary. So I'm really pleased that Mary Lynn has made that available to us and is putting a short together. Other films in it, I have to applaud our West Virginia filmmakers. Our Friday night film feature at 8 p.m. is Charlie Klein, who is a native of Braxton County, and this is his feature called Squid Man. His producer and he both, Bill Ellis, they're all from West Virginia, currently living in California, and his feature screens at 8 o'clock on Friday night. And the Saturday night feature at 9:30 is David Smith's Ladybeard, shot here in the Kanawha Valley area. And so I'm really pleased to be able to offer those. Otherwise, I could talk endlessly about the animations that are in it. This section of short films, we have three sections of short films that are fantastic. I mean, the quality of short films that I've seen submitted this year, and of course, this is my first year with this festival, but I have attended others and been at other festivals, has been really strong. And it's just a shame I can't show everything that comes in.
That's Caitlin Renee Campbell, director of the West Virginia Filmmakers Festival, this weekend in Sutton. The festivities include a workshop about production insurance and permits and the announcement of the West Virginia Filmmaker of the Year Award. Campbell says this year's festival is dedicated in the memory of Bob Gates, who Campbell calls the father of filmmaking in West Virginia. Gates died in February at the age of 69. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Our producer is Ben Aduccio. Our director is Bob Powell. I'm Beth Voorhees.